You're listening to the Strongpreneur Podcast, where we're waging war on mediocrity. Live your strong life and build your strong business with me, Tom Reber. Mediocrity dies today.
Hey, thanks for joining us on the Strongpreneur Podcast today. My name is Tom Reber from MotorHard.com. And today I'm really excited to have the one and only Iron Tamer, David Whitley, as my guest. How you doing, David?
I'm doing awesome. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing well. You hanging out in Nashville today, I hear?
Yes, indeed.
Living the dream down there?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I'm a fan of the dream and all things contained therein. So I do everything I can every day to take another little step toward being that dream.
Awesome, man. Well, I want to give our listeners a little bit of background on you. And I'm just going to read a couple bullet points here, and then I'll let you fill in anything about your story that's important for us to know. How's that?
Sounds wonderful.
So David Whitley is a performing strongman, a 21st century performing strongman. He bends phone books, or bends phone books. Anyone can bend a phone book, right?
Most people.
Yeah, he tears phone books, bends steel spikes, and other feats of strength. He's a master instructor with Strong First. He does private and group training, strength training all over the world. At one time, I don't know if you still are, but I know you were a massage therapist. He's an author. You own a gym down in Nashville called Nashville Kettlebell. What else can you tell us about David Whitley?
I have not been a massage therapist for many, many years. When I started doing massage therapy and really enjoyed it, and then when I got into doing strength-related things for a living, it was like, okay, this is what I have to do. This is what I'm supposed to do. So I kind of let that go a long time ago. But it gave me a good background in anatomy and movement and being able to relate to people and understand that when I say, how does this feel? It doesn't mean the same thing to two different people necessarily when they say it feels good or it hurts, you know. So that was really good for my communication stuff. Beyond that, I recently have connected up with my good friend Paul McElroy, and who's based out of Belfast, and become an amazing 12-week physique certified coach, and one of four in the U.S. and one of, I think there's probably 28 or 29 that are not employees at Paul's Gym Centaur there in Belfast. So I was in the first group that certified on that, and was one of the first people to implement it in the States. And I'm very, very pleased with the decision to do that, and also with the results that my my groups that are going through it right now are getting. We're 2.5 weeks in, and there's already noticeable changes in every single person. Both in terms of aesthetics and how their physique is and looks, and how well they move and their strength levels. So I'm very, very excited to be involved in that. I've also, over the past year and a half or so, gone through the coaching process with Jeff Newport and Tim Anderson's Original Strength. And I'm a fan of that stuff. And what else have I done? I like to get in cold water. That's been something I've been playing with for the past year and a half or so, just on my own personal side. Is I started several years ago experimenting off and on with cold water dousing, where you just go out in the cold and dump buckets of water over your head, and thought it was really comical this past summer when the ice bucket challenge was all the rage. I'm like, what does it take to dump a bucket of tap water over your head when it's 90 degrees outside? Because a couple of friends of mine and I were dousing all last winter, and we had one of the coldest winters in my lifetime that I can remember in Nashville, where we get down. It's not cold like Minnesota cold or even Illinois cold, but there were several stretches where it got down into the single digits Fahrenheit and even below zero Fahrenheit a couple times, which is extremely cold average for here. And we would go outside and do our thing. I went swimming in the lake when air temperature was 23 degrees. And I tell you, there are some things that you can learn doing that you can't learn any other way.
So this ice bucket challenge last year was really like child's play for you.
It was
in a lot of ways.
It was, I was glad people were doing it, because I'm glad that, you know, it was a good cause, I thought, and it was interesting to see people who really don't spend any time below about 65 degrees Fahrenheit in their house, who would normally have to put on a coat and a scarf and gloves and a hat to walk 30 feet to their car, to expose themselves to a little bit of the reality of what cold is. because it can be a harsh teacher, and I hesitate to call it painful, but if you're not accustomed to it, it can be painful. It was really a kick for me. I enjoyed seeing people doing it, and it took a long time for anybody to call me out on it too. But when they finally did, I of course participated in it.
So what are some of those things that you've learned by getting into cold water?
Well, a huge life lesson for me that was really driven home by exposing myself to the cold on purpose is how your perception of what's going on affects everything else around you. And if you begin something from the conclusion that you think you're going to have, it will color your experience. So if I'm going out and I'm going to get in a tub full of water, go get in a lake or whatever, and the air temperature is in the mid-20s or the teens Fahrenheit, and I know the water temperature is somewhere just above freezing, and I have to, you know, break a little bit of ice off to actually get into the water. Mm-hmm. I can approach that one of three different ways mentally. I can say, sweet little 7-pound, 10-ounce baby Jesus, this is going to suck, and it's going to suck bad, and it's horrible, and my God, why am I doing this, and FML, and I just know, and it's going to be bad, but I gotta man up and do it anyway, and I just got to try really hard, which is bullshit.
Yeah,
in my opinion. If that's how other people think about things, then, you know, more power to them, because that's their ride that they're on, and that's fine. But for me, it was not the most productive use of my mental energy. Now, the flip side of that is I can say, oh, this is going to be brisk and wonderful and refreshing, and everything's beautiful, and even though it's snowing, it's still sunshine and roses, which is also bullshit. It's not going to work, because I know that it's not going to be that. It's not going to be this super pleasant experience.
Right, right.
So the only option I'm left with is the third one, which is, this is going to be cold. And leave it at that. And that's factual, because it is cold. It will be colder in the water than it is out of the water. And it's colder outside of the house than it is inside the house. So there's degrees of cold there. And so if I just simply resign myself to the fact of, this is cold, and I'm going to do it, and then I'll evaluate whether it was pleasant or it sucked or anywhere in between after I'm done with it, I'm beginning with facts and arriving at a conclusion rather than starting at a conclusion and looking for facts to support. Did we just get interrupted a little bit?
Yeah, I got put on hold. That's all right.
Okay.
We're back.
All right. Sorry about that.
And we're still recording. We're good. So.
Yeah. Sorry. My iPad is connected to my phone, and I just missed an incoming phone call, but it's fine.
Cool.
So anyway, the life lesson there that spreads out into everything is that if I decide how things are going to be, and then go in and do whatever the thing is, and then it turns out to be the way that I decided it was going to be, what really happened? Did I really have that experience, or did I decide ahead of time that that's how the experience is going to be? You know, and we can take that into the gym, for example. If I say, okay, this 5-minute 100 rep set of snatches is going to be terrible, and it's going to suck, and I probably won't be able to do it, but if I do, then I'll grind through it, and I'm probably going to rip my hands. Or then that's probably going to be my experience. If I say, hey, it's no big deal, it's going to be easy, and it's not, you know, I may be lying to myself. If I know that that's not the truth, then there's a conflict that needs to get resolved there. If I just go in and say, okay, I'm going to do these snatches, and heart rate's probably going to go up, and I'll probably have to breathe a little bit extra, then that's factual, you know? And if you approach things with the facts and then arrive at the conclusion, it sounds really simple, and everyone that I've ever told it to, like, oh yeah, sure, yes, that's the way things work. But Emily, you didn't think of it. You came in here thinking that you knew what I was going to tell you before I said it.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, anytime I stumble across something, and I'm not, you know, thinking that I'm clever enough to have figured anything out, I just happen to realize that this is a thought process that works for me. That anytime I come across something like that, and I tell people, like, oh, well, yeah, sure, of course. Anytime I get that reaction, it tends to be something that there's not really any way to argue it, and the answer is so obvious that people just accept. It's like, you know, the sun's going to come up tomorrow morning sometime. Well, yeah, sure it is. Of course. Because that's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's really like, you know, I've heard over and over through the years, you know, you really get what you focus on.
Absolutely.
And so, like, you know, if you're going into a workout or going into a sales call in your business,
yeah,
or whatever the heck it is,
mm-hmm,
you know, so yeah, let's move that over to like a sales call.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with it.
What's that look like?
Let's be a little broader with that. Let's say that you've decided that you're tired of working for the man and that you want to go into business for yourself.
A lot of people doing that.
A lot of people doing that, and a lot of people failing miserably at it, and a lot of people struggling, and a lot of people doing very, very well straight out of the gate, wondering what the big deal is when people say this is going to be really tough. And if you talk to most people who have either done it or who started doing it, if you talk to most people who are about to do it, they're like, man, I know it's going to be hard, and I've got all this to do, and I got all that to do, and all this, and it's going to be rough, and I'm going to, you know, be working my ass off. Well, maybe you will. Depends on how much planning and how well you know what you're getting into. Then you got the other people. It's like, oh, I'm just going to hang a sign outside my door and people are going to flood my business and throw their money at my feet. And, you know, that doesn't really happen very often either. The reality is somewhere in between, and it's going to vary from individual to individual. So when you talk to those people, if they wind up staying open for 5 or 10 years, almost without exception, business owners of any business, not just in the fitness business, but in any business, when they look back on starting out and they had good mentors and they got good information and they didn't make common mistakes, they had a better experience. But almost without exception, the people that I've talked to and in my own experience too, don't have the struggles that they expected to have. The thing that they thought was going to suck wasn't really that big a deal. And the thing that they thought was going to be easy turned out to be way harder. And I believe that a lot of that comes from having this preconceived conclusion of how things are going to be because the people you surround yourself with. So approaching it as factually as possible is a good way to do that. And if we're talking about sales, you know, there's a whole sales process that I think works best for me anyway. And for a long time, I was of the mind that these people just needed to come in, and if they just saw what I was doing, then there wasn't any need to sell them, the stuff would sell itself. And that wasn't necessarily the case because I was missing a critical element that I never even thought of going into it. And once I understood the critical element, I was able to correct it very easily and very quickly. And that was pre-qualifying people. Because mm-hmm. if I'm selling something, a package at the gym or a, you know, set of sessions or online programming or whatever it is that I'm attempting to trade for someone else's money, and I say, okay, this is going to be $500 and this person makes $800 a month, they're not qualified.
Right.
To be my customer, and that's fine. Or they're not qualified to buy that particular product, you know. And so, when I figured out the means to screen people on the front end and not have them come in for the free trial and not have them come in for the free assessment and all that stuff, unless we had determined that I was within their budget on the front end, it saved me a lot of time and a lot of hassle dealing with people who are like, I'd really love to do it. I think it's awesome, but I just don't have the money. And then you have two choices. You can either turn them away or you can discount. And either one of those things is fine, depending on the individual. But by doing the pre-qualification on the front end, it takes care of a lot of that. Just gets it out of the way. So, you know, so someone contacts me, email or whatever, I set up a call, I call them, and I have a script that I use that is a customized version of something that I got from Sean Greeley's organization, NPE. And I go through and I ask a few questions, talk to them about why they want to get together and why it's important to them. And then based on how they respond to those things, then I will go into setting up the meeting and letting them know kind of what the range of services that they are looking for falls into. And I'll say, is that in your budget? It's just very simple. It's direct and to the point. I'll say, is that in your budget? And if they say, yes, it's no problem. We'll set the meeting up. And if they say, I don't know, I can probably swing it. You know, it sounds kind of expensive to me, but, you know, my doctor says if I don't lose 30 pounds, I'm probably going to die in the next 10 years or have to go on heart medication or whatever, you know, then I know that whatever dumb shit they've been spending their money on is probably not as important to them as getting their health together. Yeah, so
not dying.
Yeah, yeah. And not dying is way more important than Pop-Tarts to most people. But if they're like, oh, no, there's no way I can afford that because I'd have to, like, give up my bowling league or something. I don't know, whatever. something that which is very important to them but not important to me, because I don't want to sound at all like I'm being condescending towards anybody's choice of activities, because that's their thing and they can do what they want to do. But the fact is that what I do is valuable and I know it. And if you know it and you can attach the same value to it that I'm charging, then we have a working relationship. And if not, then it's nothing personal. I'm just not for you. And you can, I will be happy to direct you to other places that I know of that are more what you're looking for.
So what I love about that and the whole pre-qualification thing and stuff is that you're being super protective over your time, making sure that you're only going to work with the people that are going to be the best fit for you that you can truly help.
Absolutely.
I see a lot of business owners who take on any client they can, and they're not a great fit for them. They don't see value in what the person provides. They gripe and complain about the cost of it and everything else. And then neither party is enjoying the experience.
Right.
And that's not good. So that's great. You know, I have a couple clients. One guy, you talk about pre-qualifying, his sales doubled 2 years in a row when he started a pre-qualifying process and actually went on less sales appointments. it was great. And I have another guy who has a pre-qualification process where he gets on the phone with somebody and he's in the home improvement space. And what he found is that if he could just have a 5 or 10 minute conversation with somebody on the phone before they set up that appointment to find out if they're going to be a good fit, saves everybody a bunch of hassles. And again, the result, his sales go through the roof. He is extremely profitable and he closes about 90% of the projects he goes out and physically looks at. So it's good stuff because you got to protect your time. You only have so much time and energy and focus in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be protective if we want to have a strong business. So I want to ask you, you got a lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, I don't know if you know this, but there was a study done a few years ago where the average adult attention span was about 8 seconds.
I'm sorry, what was that?
The average attention span. Yeah, so you totally got me, man. You totally got me. Like, I thought there was like a connection issue, so I bit the hook, man. And they, in the same study, they realized that a goldfish had a 9 second attention span. So we were losing to a goldfish.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do to stay focused? Because it's like the person who goes in the gym, and if they walk over and they pick up the curl bar, which is stupid to begin with, but if they just want to do bicep curls and they walk over and do calf raises and then they go over to the leg press machine and then they go pick up a kettlebell, they're bouncing around, not really giving anything their best.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can do that in our lives too. And in our businesses, you know, we hop from activity to activity, thing to thing, project to project. I'm curious how you stay focused so that you can finish things through and get crap done.
Well, first of all, I want to address the curl thing. Because I am a huge fan of curls, and I do probably 20 or 30 different variations of curls, depending on what the desired outcome is. Because as a performing strongman, hand and forearm and arm strength is vital. Now, some people don't necessarily need to. You know, if you're doing a lot of pull-ups and presses and all that kind of stuff, you may not need any direct arm work. But for what I do, like curling plates with a pinch grip is not your standard curl. But, you know, that, of course, having said that, I'm also a huge fan of curling in the squat rack because that's the only way to get arms that look like legs.
So let me clarify my don't ever pick up a curl, curl bar. I also coach high school football, and a lot of our athletes. Okay,
yeah. you ain't got to say nothing else, boss.
Yeah, they'll go to the curl bar and not the squat rack. So,
right.
Anyway, so how do you stay focused?
How do I stay focused? The same way that you keep those high school athletes focused is, and it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about having a foregone conclusion when you start doing whatever you're going to do. Anytime you try to do everything, all things, you suck at them.
Yeah.
To be a generalist is to resign yourself to not being extremely good at anything. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to do more than one thing, you kind of have to prioritize stuff. And so, just like I was saying about the curls, if I'm doing a particular kind of curl, it's not because I'm 17 years old and trying to impress the girl down the, you know, across the hall from me in biology class with my 14-inch guns. It's because I want to get a specific response that's going to carry over most likely into some feat of strength that I'm doing for a performance that I'm going to get paid for.
Okay, so is it wrong that when I was like 17 years old, my buddy Dan and I, we'd be going to a party, and we'd get to the party, and he'd open up his trunk, and he had dumbbells in it, and we would do like a few sets of curls before we went into the party.
It's not wrong, but it's not the most efficient way.
That's, because
what you do is you and your buddy keep a towel, and then he does tricep pushdowns, and you do curls against each other, and then you switch places, and you're pumping up the bicep and the tricep with less effort or with in less time.
Oh, dude,
if
we would have hung with you, we would have been so much better off.
No doubt, man. No doubt. They'd have been throwing themselves at you. But that's actually a good parallel to what you're asking me is what is the most efficient way to get things done? That's the question that I start with on anything that I'm doing. And in order to, you know, you have to budget your time the same way you have to budget your money. Otherwise, you don't know where either one of them went, and you wonder why you don't have any left. But if I have, like right now, I've got a workshop this weekend in New York. It's the end of January. Today's the 20-something, 21st. So I've got a workshop the 24th in New York, and most of what I've been doing time-wise this week has been either getting ready for that or taking people through the next bit of whatever's going on with the Amazing 12 certification. Those have been the two focuses in my time because those are the two most urgent and important things that are going on right now. Now, it's very easy to get off track when you start focusing on things that seem to be urgent but aren't really important, or things that are very important but aren't necessarily urgent. You know, I've got a couple of things coming up in May that are very important. One very important show that I'm doing in Houston and then SFG Level 2 at the Dome in Chicago. Those are very important things to me, but they're not urgent, so they don't need as much attention right now today at the end of January as this thing that I've got that's in 3 days. Sure. So what's the most important thing right now, and then what is the next small step that I can take towards that? And so if you wake up in the morning and think, okay, and you know, actually start the night before. What's the objectives for tomorrow? Write them down, because that kind of gets your brain ready to go into do mode rather than figure out mode when you wake up, or when I wake up. So what am I going to do tomorrow? Okay, it's this and this and this. And when I wake up in the morning, I look at those goals and those objectives for the day. And if they're still the things that are most important, if I haven't overnight had some change of course in what the objective was, and I carry through with that, I'm saying, okay, what can I do today that is going to make me better at fill in the blank?
Do you have a set routine you follow each day?
Probably to about 70%.
Okay.
So I have, on any given day, at any given time, I will likely be somewhere doing something specific, but then there's a lot of, just the nature of what I do, there's a lot of stuff that I'm able to, okay, I got an email today that I need to shift my schedule around for Friday, and I can do that. Mm-hmm. So it's not regimented down to the minute, but I do, you know, kind of keep track of where I'm going to be and what I'm going to do.
Yeah, you talked about setting those objectives the night before. For me and my business, one of the most important things that I personally do with my time is I create content, whether it's writing blogs or doing stuff like this. And you know, content for me always leads to income at some point. It's just the nature of my business. And so what I found is that if I don't write first thing in the morning, that first hour that I get up and have my coffee and write, I, you know, I'm shot for the rest of the day, because it usually doesn't happen. So what I've been doing is I write on a whiteboard in my office at home here the things that I want to write about the next morning. And then, you know, somehow my subconscious mind works on it throughout the night, and I usually get up and I get into the flow real quick, and I can bang out some stuff in that first hour that would normally take me several hours if I'm just piecemealing through the day.
Yeah, so. I think it's really interesting, and I chuckled a bit when you said something about writing on a whiteboard, because I'm sitting in my office. My wife and I moved into this house 8 or 9 months ago, and I have a little small space in the basement that I converted into my office and place where I store my old comic books. And I have one wall that I painted with dry erase paint. So the entire wall is a whiteboard.
Love it.
It's, 6.5 feet high and probably 12 feet wide. And as you were saying that, I was looking up at the things that I wrote on the board yesterday that I thought might be relevant to the call today.
I love it. That's great, man. That's cool. See, go ahead.
And interestingly enough, the one that I wrote at the top is the there's a lot of stuff like this. It's a saying that sounds really clever, and it is clever, but it can be sort of incomplete, right? So the one I wrote up on at the top of the board was success leaves clues. That gets thrown around a lot. Everybody's heard that one, right?
Right.
The other side of that is failure leaves detailed, explicit, step-by-step instructions.
Yeah, don't do that again.
Yeah. Or don't do what they did.
You're right.
If you want to learn from someone else's mistake. So yeah, we've all heard, you know, find someone who's doing the thing that you want to do and then do what they did. But it may be more important to not do what they screwed up at.
Yeah, it's just like earlier you were talking about pre-qualifying people. You know, a lot of people on their websites and stuff. I had a guy named Marcus Sheridan on who I talked to the other day, who's big in content marketing world. You know, he talked about on your websites, most businesses love to sit there and spell out everything that, you know, we do and who we're a good fit for. He says the opposite is actually more impactful when you come right out on your website or the content you produce and say, this is who we're not a good fit for. You know, so it's very, you know, you're absolutely right. It's not always about imitating the successes. It's avoiding the or not making those same mistakes of those who fail.
Yeah, which goes into what I think is the really important point, and this goes back to the gym as well, and it sort of springs forth in there, is we're all individuals, and what I do for me may or may not work for you or anybody else. The important thing is don't blindly copy what somebody else is doing, because just because you follow Kurt Kowarski's squat routine does not mean you're going to squat 1,000 pounds.
Right.
Right? More likely you're going to wind up breaking something because you're not Kurt. And honestly, that was 20 years ago, and Kirk's not Kirk anymore. Kirk wouldn't follow the same set and rep and pounder scheme now that he was following back when he was in his physical prime and without injuries and all that kind of stuff. So to just kind of cut and paste whatever I'm doing my business and try to follow that and not have my personality in it is probably not going to work as well as looking at what I do and how I inject myself into what I'm doing, or looking at you and how you express yourself as a part. Your business is ultimately an expression of yourself, is how it comes down to. So take that idea, and then if there's any details that go along with it, like one of the things that you're clearly doing is you're interviewing other people, right? I did that for a while. It didn't really work that well for me, and so I don't do that at all anymore. So we have two examples of two people in similar fields who are one who's interviewing people as a huge part of what he's doing, one who doesn't interview people at all, and we're both happy with the way things are going for ourselves. So to whoever's listening, should you interview somebody for your website or should you not? I don't know. You'll have to play with that and figure it out for yourself. So don't just blindly follow what anybody's doing. Look at it and test it out and see if it works for you. Now, notice that phrase, test it out.
Yeah.
I didn't say look at it and then decide it's not going to work because you're different than everybody else. That's starting from a conclusion.
Yeah, it's being honest with yourself. It's just going, all right, you know, if you know, take this, take podcasting, for instance, you know, with talking to people, it's been on my radar for a couple of years. The time felt right, and so now I'm doing it. Only time is going to tell if it's a good fit for me. And if I choose to not do it anymore, it doesn't mean that that I'm a failure. It just means, hey, this just isn't resonating with me in a way that I wanted it to. And I think that's what a lot of people, I want people to risk more, take more chances, throw more things up against the wall, see what sticks, see what feels right. And, cause when you're truly doing what feels right to you, and you're having a good time with it, you know, that's never a bad thing.
No. And it goes back to the old Bruce Lee quote about, to honestly express yourself can be a very difficult thing, but ultimately all expression comes down to self-expression. So whose idea are you expressing? Whose idea of you are you expressing? Is it yours? Is it who you think people want you to be? Is it who someone told you should be? Or is it who you honestly are? And it's getting pretty deep and esoteric for an entrepreneurial type call, but I think that is at the core of everything. And I think that a guy like Napoleon Hill or James Allen would agree with me.
Definitely. So let me kind of change gears here just a little bit. And we both rub shoulders with a lot of personal trainers, gym owners, things like that. And so I guess I want to ask a real specific question for those people.
I got a feeling somebody's about to get their feelings hurt, but okay.
All right. So many of them are struggling building their businesses, fill in their classes, getting in, you know, we're talking like the small group classes. We're not talking the big box, you know, $4 a month gyms, obviously. So, what do you see as some of the biggest mistakes that these trainers and gym owners are making that are keeping them from having a strong business?
The number one thing, in my opinion, I think everything else probably relates back to this in some way, although I can't say that with certainty, but that's kind of my initial feeling when I say this. I think that it is the most important thing that anyone is coming to us as people in the fitness business for is they want a specific result. No one cares about your qualifications. No one cares about who you know in the business. No one cares about whether or not you did this certification or that certification or whether you've got a degree in exercise science or whatever. I've been doing this for 12, almost 13 years, and never once has anyone said, well, you seem to know what you're talking about, but I'm going to need to see your certificate before I give you any money. Mm-hmm. You know, and so focusing on that result that they're looking for means that you and the client are both moving toward the same objective. And you sometimes may be coming at it from different angles. You sometimes may be side by side. Sometimes you may be carrying them towards it. But focusing on the result and more specifically, the needs of the individual who's attempting to achieve those results and enlisting your professional help in getting them is the single most important thing that will drive business to you. Now I'm not, you have to kind of take a caveat with that there are people who are very motivated that you can't stand to be around. And those aren't people that it's a good idea for me to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got a lot of money and you're very driven and I think you're a douche, I'm not going to work with you.
Right.
Which goes back to the idea that I know that the value of what I'm doing to the person has to exceed what they're giving me in money. And if they're just a douche, then they don't really value the experience that I'm helping them with. So I won't do it because it's not worth it to me to to spend all of my time not working, bitching about somebody that I'm working with because they're a problem person. And I say that because I have been in that position, because I took people that I knew was a bad idea to work with because I needed the money. And sometimes that's a necessary thing, and get out of it as quick as you can. But more often than not, you'll find that when you cut that vampiric sort of influence out of your life, it opens up room for more good stuff to come in, because your energy is not being directed in toward that anymore. It's available to receive more good stuff. So,
and that's such a tough thing, man. I mean,
yeah.
it's so tough. Intellectually, we get it. I shouldn't work with people that aren't a good fit for me. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, you go, shit, I don't have any money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a balance that's so hard.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I guess, if you have 10 clients now and 6 of them are not ideal clients and 4 are ideal, six months from now, let's try to swing it the other way. Let's make progress so that over time the ratio changes.
And there's something too to the idea, I think, that if you've got 6 people that you're working with and 10 people that you're working with, and 6 of them are people that you don't like and don't want to be with, maybe you're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. that either that, or you're too cheap.
Which is doing the wrong thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe that's your problem. Maybe you're, for whatever reason, you're attracting those people. I don't know. But I think that there's an old saying that I'm familiar with, that because we talked in our initial emails that I insisted on having heavy metal music. And I said something about beer, but it's like 10 in the morning, and that's a little early for beer for me on a weekday.
Right.
But that's so we got coffee instead. But go ahead.
No, go on. That's fine. I was just going to make a joke that was probably not going to be funny. So we're good. Go ahead.
That's fine. That's fine. So by not making a joke that's not funny, you achieve the same objective. So when we were talking, I jokingly said something about music. It's because I used to be a musician, and I used to play music professionally. And there was a saying that I realize transcends disciplines. You can apply it to fitness people. You can apply it I'll just tell you what it is. In the beginning, the musician focuses on playing the instrument. Mm-hmm. The advanced musician will focus on playing the music, right?
Playing for the song.
Yeah, playing the music. And I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. The true master musician will play the audience. So to kind of transfer that over to the fitness business, mm-hmm. the amateur will focus on the tool, the barbell, the kettlebell, whatever they've got on hand.
The curl bar.
The curl bar or the cardio machine that kind of stuff. The intermediate or the allegedly advanced, because there's a lot of guys that I would consider to be advanced that do this, they will focus on programming, which can be as simple and silly as 3 sets of 10, or it can be as complicated as anything that's more complicated than 3 sets of 10. So the advanced coach will work with programming. But the true master, I believe, will work only on the needs of the individual that's in front of it, and they will get the best results. Now, you'll get results at the other stages too. I mean, you're still making music, but are you masterful at it? And that's the direction that I have been consciously sort of removing any obstacle from, and focusing on going with myself as a fitness guy or as a strength guy or whatever is, okay, what does this person really, really need and want, and why? What are they looking for from a result? Okay, what is going on with them physically for me to work with? What is going on with them in the rest of their environment, their job, their house, their commute, whatever? What is going on with them emotionally and how to communicate with them. What kind of baggage are they bringing from when they were picked on as a kid, or when they, you know, when she was a prom queen, and now 20 years later she's 50 pounds overweight, and she can't step on a scale one time without stepping on it 50 times, you know? So if I take somebody like that and say, oh, well, I'll scribble out some stuff with a crayon and this piece of paper, and you go do it, and in 6 weeks you'll look and feel awesome and be strong, it's not going to work.
You're going to have so much more of an impact when you understand the context of what they're living in.
Yeah, and to use another trite and overused but very accurate analogy, the map is not the territory. Mm-hmm. It's not. Because if I give you directions to drive from where you are to where I am right now and say, just do this, and you adhere to that no matter what, even if the bridge is out that's going over the Mississippi River, then it's not going to work, or it's going to take a real long time.
Right. You know, so I loved your analogy about the music. I didn't know that you played professionally, but I've done a lot of live and studio work in the past, and I actually play drums. And what do you play?
I play guitar.
Play guitar, right. So, you know, you're talking about the different levels of trainers and this and that, and then earlier you talked about the certifications and how important we think they are and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of...
And this is coming from a guy who gets paid to teach at certifications.
Right, right. I mean, that's...
I'm not saying they're unimportant. I'm saying that the value that they carry is usually with the person who holds it, not with the person who's coming to see them.
Exactly. And so it reminds me of when I would learn a new groove. I'd do some sort of odd time groove that was really cool.
Yeah.
Or I'd do a fill or this or that. And
blink'em, 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 blink'em. That's my favorite drum fill.
So what I realized is that less is more as a musician. You know, just as a drummer, in most cases, you don't have to pull everything out of the magic tool bag every time you play the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we do that because we want to show off. We want to say, hey, look what I know, or look what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
But the more mature musician and more mature drummer is content, you know, playing a groove like Tom Petty's drummer will, you know, which is just super simple, and it's playing for the audience, and people are tapping their foot and bopping their heads and getting what they want out of it. So, you know, it's really being secure in who you are and what you're doing and what's the best approach for that situation.
See, I'm going to – less is more is a lot like success leaves clues. It makes sense, but I don't think it's complete. Less is more unless it's not, because if you take Tom Petty's drummer and he has to fill in for like Vinnie Paul and Pantera, if they were still together, that's not going to work.
Not going to work at all.
Right. It's not going to work.
Yep.
Because he's not playing the music and he's not playing the audience, even though he's undoubtedly a proficient enough drummer to have been getting paid for years to play drums. So it's not, in my opinion, that less is more. It's that whatever's effective is effective when it's effective. And we've heard the saying, everything works until it doesn't. But I think that the truth of that is that everything works when it's applied appropriately. And if it's not working anymore, you're not applying it appropriately, not that it stopped working.
Man, I'm getting schooled here. This is good. I'm learning a lot, man. I appreciate it. Go ahead.
It's not that I'm saying that what you said is wrong, because I agree with where you're coming from in that, but it goes back to that individualism. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes back to, what am I trying to accomplish right now? Because if more needs to be more, you know, if they're lazy, or if they're kind of stuck in a rut, and we need to add an unreasonable amount of weight to the bar and take them from 8 reps down to 2 to kind of give their nervous system a different stimulus, then they come back the next week and they were stronger than they were, then it worked, you know. And that's just a, you know, me pulling an example out of the air. But everything works until it doesn't work is incomplete. Less is more is incomplete. Success leaves clues is incomplete. There are indicators of a more in-depth understanding of a particular situation. And that's all I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to school anybody. I'm just, you know, you ask my opinion, I'm telling you.
No, it's all good. It's all good. So let me ask you this. I talk a lot about going toe-to-toe with things that we fear.
Uh-huh.
not avoiding it. I liken it to if you and I are standing face to face and you're going to punch me, when I see that you're going to punch me, if I move closer to you, that punch never reaches full force. And so in theory, it's not going to hurt as much. Now from you, it might, because you're a strong man and you'll break me in half. But it's closing that distance. It's moving towards the things that we fear. So an example I'll give you is, for years, I thought I was stupid. For 2 years in grade school, I rode the little yellow short bus. Had a lot going on in my life at the time, and you know, long story I won't get into here, but it set the stage for me that I wasn't smart. Like, I just had this head trash rolling around, and for years I carried it around with me until I decided, you know, I'm going to go toe-to-toe with this stuff and really do the things that were intimidating me. So one of those things was, I had an event that I had been invited to speak at for a few years, and I kept turning it down because it was in the education industry. Okay, so that was an example where I'm like, you know what, I got to go toe-to-toe with this thing, or it's going to own me, and I don't want to be owned by it anymore. Do you have any examples of things that you've been, you know, really freaked out about, or things you fear maybe in business or your life or whatever it is that you've had to go toe-to-toe with?
Remember that cold water we were talking about?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that is a much more, your experience. First of all, you didn't decide that you weren't smart. You were led to believe by well-meaning but misinformed people that you weren't smart. Mm-hmm. People that you trusted, people that most likely really did care about you, but they were just wrong. So to carry that over to the fitness business, if someone's a personal trainer who's operating on really bad information and they keep hurting people, it may not be because they're out to hurt people. It may be they just don't know what they're doing. So the people who put you on the short bus and told you whatever it was that they told you and put you in whatever classes you were in that led you to believe that you weren't smart affected you in that way, because they thought it was for your own good, and they were ignoring the needs of the individual. What was happening is you didn't fit into their little 3x10 cookie cutter program. You needed something different than that.
Right.
And you know, the box didn't fit you, or you didn't fit the box. And I think that ultimately that winds up being a wonderful thing, because it led you to the lesson of facing that fear and going toe to toe with it. Because what you find out when you do that sort of stuff, you have a choice. You can either accept that, well, I rode the short bus and I'm just never going to be that smart, so I'm going to, you know, resign myself to that. And if I don't try much, I won't fail much.
Just,
you know,
settle for what I get and move on. Right? Yeah.
I was a fat kid who had a horrible, horrible, debilitating stutter. And like, when book report day came, and I knew I was smart. Everybody knew that I was, you know, relatively intelligent as far as kids go. And I would read the hell out of a comic book, and I would read books like crazy, and I would get all excited, and then I couldn't talk. And so when book report time came, if I would get up in front of class, start talking, I would turn into this big stuttering, slobbering mess, and put that on top of being a fat kid. You know, that's who I was in the third, fourth, fifth grade. And now I get in front of groups of anywhere from four or five on up to the biggest group I've ever spoken in front of was several thousand. They're performed in front of several thousand. So I'm cool with that now, you know? So it's the same sort of thing. At some point along the way, you have to look at yourself and be like, okay, am I really who they told me I am? Or am I going to be who I know that I am? And it sounds like that's, you know, a similar path to what's happened with you. But yeah, so initially for me, just the act of getting up in front of people and doing anything that involved speaking was horrifying, and may have had something to do with me playing the guitar but not ever learning how to sing. Mm-hmm. Or it could just be that I don't have a whole lot of natural talent at singing. Guitar playing was fun and easy to me. I didn't like to hear myself sing, so I, you know, we tend to gravitate towards things that we're good at. I think that getting comfortable acting like an idiot in front of people playing in rock bands may have helped me a lot with being able to act like an idiot and Ben Steele in front of people now and be able to speak and be cohesive about it. It helped with that confidence, you know. But so that was the the furthest going thing that's probably had the most reach for me. The idea that somewhere along the way, a mistake that most of us have made somewhere along the way is the place down the street where they have people who are training people charge, just pulling numbers out of there, they charge $100 a session. I'm only going to charge 60 because I'm just starting out. And how flawed that is, and how you're devaluing yourself because you haven't been around as long as someone that you have no idea whether they even know what they're doing, you know?
That's a great example, man.
It is. Because how about this? You got a gas station on an exit at the interstate, and they build another gas station right across the street from it. Does the one that just opened up charge 50 cents less a gallon because they just opened up? If a new grocery store opens up, do you get a dollar off a gallon of milk because they're new? No. The value that's attached to stuff has very little to do with how long you've been in the business, and has everything to do with whether or not you can deliver the result. And if you know you can deliver the result, that makes your pre-qualification and your sales process go that much smoother. Because you pre-qualify, you don't worry like, if you can't really afford it, then I'll discount you just because I feel sorry for you and I don't really think that what I'm doing is worth as much as I'm charging in the first place. I'm all about discounts if it's something that you really want to do. Mm-hmm. But pricing yourself low gives you nowhere else to go. Pricing yourself higher, then you're free to discount if you choose to discount because you really want to work with someone and you want to have them experience something they legitimately don't have the money to afford your services. So kind of all of that head trash that goes around my value as a professional and my understanding of the exchange of value between money and services and being centered around a result, it took me a long time to be able to be completely comfortable with that.
How did you get there? I mean, was it just a matter of making a decision to go, you know, this is what I'm worth and I'm sticking to my guns, or what did that journey look like?
Yeah. It was a matter of looking around and saying, okay, the thing that I do is, yes, I'm new at it, but at the time there was no one else around me who was doing anything even close to it. So I figured I could just, you know, kind of set my price toward the high end of what the other people in the general area of fitness were doing. And I did, and it worked. Being able to stick to that was one of those things that's like, you start a training program and then a few weeks into it, you're leaner and stronger, whatever your goal happens to be. If you've made that incremental step and you can see that result, that's moving in that direction, then that success fuels more confidence, which in turn attracts more success. And so as I saw that people were willing to pay me what I was asking and they were getting the result and more people were coming about as a result of that, which in turn fueled my desire to get better at what I was doing, because I'm like, this is awesome and it's working great for them and I'm getting paid. I want to be even better at it so that we can make the whole experience better. And so practicing my craft was something that was always very fun for me to do. It was, again, like I said earlier, it's an expression of who I am at this point in my life. So being able to tie all that together and realize that it's not about just an exchange of money for service. It's about an exchange of value for value. And if you can set it up so that everybody wins, then everybody wins. Yeah. And it sort of fed on itself. Like the more successful I was at charging a little bit higher price like that, the easier it became to talk to the next person about it. Because if you got one person who's paying you what seems like more money than someone just starting out should be charging, and then another person comes in and they see one other person like, well, maybe you're worth it, maybe you're not. But if you've got 15 people that are doing that, then they're like, well, these people are paying it. These people are getting the result that I'm looking for. So yeah, sure, I'll do it.
Yeah, it's about creating that momentum.
Yeah,
you know, man, that's good stuff, man. So I have like a million things I want to ask, but for time's sake, we can't.
Right.
I'm trying to I guess to kind of start to bring it home, I guess I want to ask you, and you've done a lot to over the last several years with your career, your gym, mm-hmm. your training around the world, and strongman shows, and all this other stuff. It's pretty cool. So, I guess at this point in the game, what do you feel that you personally need to strengthen in order to continue growing your brand as you move forward?
The primary objective for me is I put this on Facebook at the beginning of the year when everybody was doing their resolutions, is making a concerted effort every day to honestly express myself to the best of my ability. And I have never put it in those definitive terms as concretely as that until just a few weeks ago. And I've felt for years that that's kind of what I wanted to be doing. But until I actually sat down and said, what is it that I'm trying to say and how simply can I put that? There's that. So that's sort of the underlying thing. Having said that, the direction that I want to take everything that I'm doing is I am interested in more performances, more strongman stuff, it's almost like a motivational speaker type thing. There's stuff that I want to say to people and use feats of strength to illustrate these things mm-hmm. very graphically. That's the direction that I'm headed with stuff. I'm fortunate that along the way and everything that I've expressed a great amount of interest in, and the powers that be have managed to put into my life the people who are among the best in the world at those things. So I wound up several years ago becoming a student of and a friend of a man named Dennis Rogers, who's one of the he's the most seen strongman in history for sure. He's been on pretty much every TV channel, Oprah, Jimmy Kimmel, David Letterman, Tom Green back when he had a show. He's been on a bunch of, done a bunch of specials on him, Stanley Superhumans, all that kind of stuff. He's the guy that taught me how to do feats of strength, but also he taught me a lot about showmanship and the mindset that goes along, not just with bending a piece of steel or whatever feat is at hand, but how to communicate with an audience. And so that area of my business and my brand is where I want to do more, and I want to be better at that. So getting out there and breaking stuff for fun and profit is the thing that I want to do more of. I don't know if I answered your question exactly.
No, you did, man. I think that's great. It's funny you talk about doing the strongman stuff and for audiences. I saw a video of you doing that in a high school. Mm-hmm. I think it's your promo video, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's at a community college, but a bunch of young kids there.
I'm speaking later today at a high school in our area here today. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking how cool it would be to be able to do what you do and mm-hmm. communicate the message, because it just hits home even more when you do something like you do. So
I did a thing last year at a it's called the Geek Media Expo. It's like a comic book, video game, Comic Con, science fiction kind of convention type thing. And this girl comes up to me, and after the show was over with, young girl, probably in her late teens, early 20s, not a super attractive girl, but not an ugly girl either, just very nondescript. And a few people come up, hey, thanks for the show, and then whatever, that kind of thing, and tell me they enjoyed it. But she's standing there waiting until everyone else is done. And she comes up to me, and she's looking at the floor the whole time. And she's like, during the show, I talk a little bit about being a fat kid with a stutter and the ability to get past that, and how from a very young age I wanted to have superhuman strength, and how I was inspired by the Hulk in the comic book, and then Lou Ferrigno as a person made it real to me, and kind of go through this whole thing like that. And she comes up and she says, I just want to let you know that was really really meant a lot to me, because this is my first time at one of these conventions. She's looking at the floor the whole time. Mm. my first time at one of these conventions like this, and all these other people know so much more about all this stuff than me, but I really like this stuff and I wanted to come. And so I did come, and she kind of gets this, can't quite, and then she looks up and looks me dead in the eye, and she's like, I really needed to hear what you said today.
Wow.
And there's tears swelling up in her eyes, and I'm like, well, there you go. That right there, that is what I want to do. That's who I want to be.
That's cool. That's good. I mean, that's such a huge impact in somebody's life, and you know they're thinking about that day even now.
Well, and if she was so shy, and she was clearly shy, that she was dressed at a place where people are dressed up like the Avengers. She was dressed to blend into the wall. Mm-hmm. And for her to come up and wait for everybody and come to talk to me like that, it must have been very important to her. So that's the kind of stuff that I want to do.
Well, that's awesome. So anyone listening, you need a speaker to come in for your event, consider the Iron Tamer to come in and Ben Steele and inspire people. And I'll definitely share that with all of my networks and things like that as well, man.
I do appreciate it.
So listen, David, I appreciate you taking time with us today.
Thank you.
If people want to connect with you, how do they do it?
There are any number of ways. I have a professional Facebook page that is Iron Tamer Dave Whitley. They can go like that. I have a personal page, but it's got a backlog of unanswered friend requests because I didn't know there was such a thing as a pro page in the first place until it was too late and lesson learned. But my professional Facebook page, I'm on Twitter, Iron Tamer. I have a YouTube channel that is also Iron Tamer. And if you want to email me directly, I have a personal email account, irontamer@gmail.com. My website, of course, irontamer.com, strengthdojo.com. But I'll tell you the honest truth, the website hasn't been updated in probably coming up on 3 years, and it needs some attention. So if you're one of those people that looks at a website and decides whether or not they want to have anything to do with the person, then my website is not going to impress you. Go to my YouTube channel. Go find me on Facebook.
There you go.
Email me, irontamer@gmail.com, or check out any of the stuff on YouTube if you want to get a better idea of what the feats of strength look like. I don't have anything that's a long segment of me doing the motivational type talking, but there's feats of strength on there, and I have a couple different talks I do, but the primary one is to do with there's a superhero inside everyone, or there's some superhuman ability inside of everyone, and I encourage you to find that, attach to it, and develop it until that, because that's who you really are. Yeah. You are that superhero. Go be that. Go do good things. I told them, go forth and kick much ass.
Go forth and kick much ass. I love that. That's well, David, this has been a great talk, man. I appreciate you hanging out with us today.
Yes, sir.
Wish you the best of luck as you're moving ahead and kicking the crap out of mediocrity and all that good stuff. All right, so thank you for hanging out with us today on the Strongpreneur Podcast. Do yourself a favor and take one thing. Just take one thing that the Iron Tamer shared today, whatever hit you, and do something with it. Don't let it just sit there and die in your brain. Take that one thing that really resonated with you and put something into practice. So live your strong life.
Absolutely. If I said anything that means anything to anybody and you think that's a direction you want to go, don't wait until tomorrow. Don't wait until next week. Figure out where you want to go and take that very first small step, because you've heard the expression, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And that's true. But the completion of that journey is just a bunch of small steps.
Mm-hmm. Got to start. Got to do something. Got to act, or does you no good.
Just take the next small step.
Awesome. David, thank you very much. Have an awesome day. And we'll see you guys next time.
Rock and roll.